This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking levels, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Oh, my God! Oh, no! We have gremlins today. Gremlins, gremlins today. If I'm a little dark, I apologize. I don't know why. I hate when this happens, but what's going on is I'm having computer issues. Go figure. It's so unusual here on this show. I do have a busy show lined up for you today. Oh, and I don't look like I'm dark on this screen. My new monitor, my new used monitor that I got, just crapped out on me, which leads me to believe that it wasn't the monitor in the first place, but the computer. And I found out literally 7 minutes before showtime. So I'm scrambling trying to fix it and actually wasn't able to. So bear with me today because I'm doing things a little differently and I'm all screwed up. You know what? Let's just get Lisa Graves on the line. I thought I called her. I guess I didn't. So Lisa Graves is the first person that I want to check in with today because, you know, she's a former deputy assistant attorney general under both the Clinton and W administrations, under attorney generals Janet Reno and John Ashcroft. And so because of that, she is my go-to person when I have questions about things in the Department of Justice, in the law. Forgive me for not having Lisa's Chiron up because I've been dealing with gremlins in the studio for a little while. So I'll try to get that done. But in the meantime, Lisa Graves, you there?
I am. Thanks for having me on, Nicole.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. And I apologize in advance for the gremlins that I have in the studio today. So, Lisa, I contacted you because another story dropped, another shoe dropped in this story about the special master and all the stuff surrounding Donald Trump. And this judge that he appointed, Aileen Cannon, I thought she learned her lesson the last time she made a ridiculous ruling and the appeals court basically put her in her place. But it seems like she hasn't learned at all because now she's saying, well, that's okay. Donald Trump and his lawyers don't have to back up their claims that the FBI planted some of these documents when they were executing the search warrant at Mar-a-Lago. Have you ever heard anything like this before?
No, it really is stunning. And when you mentioned another shoe dropping, I was reminded of some joke I heard as a kid about you need like a centipede for all the shoes dropping, because it just seems like one thing after another. And here's a very inexperienced person in terms of her judicial experience, who was tapped by Trump for a position that she never should have been confirmed for. The special master is someone who has served as a judge for a very long time, including handling, significant national security cases in his time on the bench. And she has just intervened in a way that seems, you know, unprecedented and highly irregular to stop him from asking the Trump team to provide what any judge would expect someone to provide when they've made such a claim, to provide an inventory of what he claims is taken, since he's claimed that other things were taken that were his possessions. And who would know what those are but him?
Right.
So it's really extraordinary.
It blew my mind. I mean, I thought, you know, she was sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Taken to task for her last ruling that was less than respected among legal circles, right? And this time, it seems like she just threw everything against the wall and said, well, Donald Trump appointed me, so I'm going to do what he wants me to do. Am I reading it wrong?
Well, I think that I think a reasonable person would have the impression that she's basically creating rules and creating processes for Trump and Trump alone that are not typical for what the actual rule of law means in this country. And so, you know, I would say that she's behaving shamelessly as if she's in his pocket, in his corner, which is the last thing you want from any federal judge.
Right.
And their mind is biased and treat the powerful and the powerless equally and hold all to account before the law. And she has signified over and over again her deference to Trump, who's no longer president and who is the subject of a search warrant, a criminal search warrant that includes, you know, very serious charges that include some of the most significant types of materials that the United States government creates for our national security.
It is astounding. And then she, you know, so she's trying to limit this inexperienced, newly appointed judge who many are questioning her credentials, dares to tell this special master who's been, as you said, a respected judge. He's been through it all. That's the reason that the Department of Justice, when Trump's lawyers suggested his name, said, okay, we're good with Judge Deary, because he's respected and he's going to do the right thing. She's now telling him basically that she has the right to fire him. Did I read that wrong? I mean, I know it was in her original ruling when she appointed him the special master, but they are appealing this, right? This is going to go to the same 11th Circuit Court of Appeals?
It is extraordinary. I mean, on the surface, of course, a special master is someone who has been chosen by a judge in a federal case to handle or to look into a particular matter, maybe a particularly complex matter such as discovery and that sort of thing. So in general, it's certainly the case that a special master, doesn't have that job forever and serves because that judge chose them. But here you have a judge, this Trump appointee, who is basically inventing things as she goes along. And so for, you know, the sort of the assertion that she's just going to fire him if he doesn't toe the line that she's towing, bending over backwards for Trump, is just extraordinary. And I it could very well be appealed, and it may well be appealed to the 11th Circuit, which is the court above her, which rebuked her,
yes,
including Republican people appointed by Republican presidents, rebuked her previously for her exceptionally poor reasoning and analysis. But she is unchained, or it's basically not reserved based on that. She seems to be willing to do whatever she can to help the man who got her on the bench, got her this lifetime gig with this six-figure salary, this sweet position down there in Southern Florida on the federal bench. And as you and I talked about before, I mean, she's never served as a state court judge.
No.
She is someone who has no judicial experience and someone who barely passed the 10-year mark from law school to even have the minimal notion that she could theoretically become a federal judge. I certainly would never have voted to confirm her if I were in the Senate. And I don't think anyone who took a hard look at her record would ever have thought that this is the person who should be sitting for the rest of her life as a federal judge presiding over matters of justice and truth that affect the American people.
Absolutely not. Now, the other thing, the ruling from the 11th Circuit Court, if I understand this correctly, the Justice Department still has those 100 original, the classified documents, and their criminal investigation is allowed to continue. So this latest thing from Judge Cannon has nothing to do with that. That continues. In the meantime, they will, you know, but what they did was, what she did was extend the deadline to late in December. So it's all moot leading up to the election. The urgency of the matter has been taken away. And the whole thing
seems
creepy.
Yeah, it seems like another way in which she's trying to put her thumb on the scale of justice in terms of, the potential for people to understand the true impact of this case before the election. I mean, as we talked about before, and as I know your listeners know, you know, for a judge to try to intercede in a federal criminal investigation in this way is just exceptional and super problematic. It says all the wrong things about her being impartial. She doesn't appear to be impartial at all.
No.
And this is a case that's not just an ordinary criminal case, and that's not because it involves the former president of the United States. It's because it involves some of the most significant types of materials that we have to protect our nation. It appears that he not only took materials with him, but removed them from their folders, which is what helps designate them as classified in addition to internal markings. But like, there were numerous folders that had nothing in them. Where did those documents go? Who has them now? Are they in the United States? Are they at some other Trump property? Are they with some other Trump comrade? These are very, very disturbing, a very disturbing situation. And to have a judge behaving so cavalierly, really a political pawn, in trying to bend the rules to favor him, you know, that's just wrong. I think any reasonable American would think that's just wrong.
It is just wrong. And hopefully the 11th Circuit, I mean, they've acted very quickly in the first appeal. Hopefully they'll be as fast on this one, because this Judge Cannon, you know, people are calling her Judge Loose Cannon, seems to be just that. She's going off the rails, isn't she?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know. Every appeal, kind of makes its own way. We'll see what happens. It certainly seems like on the surface to me, this is just another example of why she should have recused herself. She could still recuse herself. If she had any integrity, she probably would recuse herself. She is someone who I don't think anyone will have anyone other than a Trump, fanboy or fangirl will have any confidence at all in whatever she ultimately rules in this case.
Oy, oy, oy. Okay, so that's going on, Lisa Graves. Meanwhile, Monday is the first Monday in October, so the Supreme Court's new term begins, 10 months, and the new court debuts. Today was the official ceremony that makes Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson a justice of the Supreme Court. But she's coming in at a very, very strange time. I mean, there's history, and then there's whatever Ginny Thomas is. She spoke to the January 6th committee yesterday behind closed doors, but the one thing we learned about it is that she's adamant in her belief that the 2020 election was stolen for Donald Trump. I just don't know what to say to that. What do you say to that?
Well, I personally don't really care much about what Jenny believes or supposedly believes or says she believes, because she's an extremist who peddles lies. She's someone who has been in the thick of numerous political operations to try to distort the law in this country. And her text to Mark Meadows reveal just how extreme she is, how she wanted to stop the lawfully elected president from being inaugurated as president in our democracy. And I think, another way in which I think any reasonable person who has tracked her at all would laugh out loud at the assertion that came out of that meeting that she supposedly never talks politics with her bestie, Clarence Thomas. Can I see this on the air?
Yes, that is bullshit.
That is completely out of character. Completely out of character of who she is. It's an absurd assertion. I think you can discount every single thing that woman says. She is someone who is extreme and someone who peddles extremism, peddles things that are just not true. And the notion that she believes it, I mean, who knows what she actually believes? When you see her performance in various settings, what you see is someone who is devoted to some of the most extreme ideas that are circulating in our country right now.
Right. And so again, she and Clarence, her husband, they've referred to each other. He's my best friend. Of course they talk about everything. And for her to say that we don't ever discuss this stuff, again, as you put it, Lisa,
bullshit.
It's bullshit. And that yeah, is sorry. Just so it's infuriating, because no person is supposed to be above the law. But it seems like Clarence Thomas is.
I mean, look, she was rebuked already for the things that she sent out on the clerk clerk family channel. There was a big story about how she had been using that outlet to his clerks to pitch her political nonsense. So this idea that she never talks about it is just a laugh out loud, bald-faced lie.
Yeah.
Bold-faced lie as well. In my view, she's a liar. And, you know, so hopefully someday we'll get the true truth. And maybe she'll be prosecuted for perjury, because I think she's someone who is willing to do whatever it takes to advance her extreme cause, as you could see from the text that she was sending to Meadows, and also the people that she has claimed that anyone should support. You know, the people that other lawyers, other right wing lawyers like Bill Barr, referred to, you know, disparagingly as like just some of the worst lawyers, you know, terrible lawyering. Sidney Powell.
Yeah.
And, you know, that crew, that's who she was promoting as the brain trust. I mean, this is some serious stuff. And as you know, and as your listeners know, it's not only that she's been doing this, but her husband was the sole, singular, one dissenting vote against allowing Congress to have access to the materials that it has a right to have access to from Trump. And so somehow, miraculously, coincidentally, her husband, who supposedly has no political views whatsoever, despite the fact that he obviously does and talks about them and has promoted them in various ways, supposedly he just randomly became the only person who dissented from having the materials, some of the materials that are at stake in these various investigations being released. You know, that just doesn't pass the smell test.
No, not at all. And so with the term of the court beginning on Monday, Lisa Graves, you're someone who has been served at the highest levels of the Department of Justice. Do you have faith in the Supreme Court of the United States anymore?
I think this court lacks integrity, and I think that you can see it by the decisions that it's been issuing for a number of years now, including this last term, the decision to reach out to overturn Roe versus Wade. That was a decision that was orchestrated by the far right, the fringe that has captured this court. The faction that controls this court, the six judges, really five plus Roberts, but Roberts is part of that. You know, we're determined to overturn a legal precedent that stood for, you know, nearly 50 years. And they did so willingly, willfully, intentionally, as soon as they had the votes to do it. Because of political appointees to this court. The fact is that this Supreme Court gets requests to hear cases from nearly 9,000 petitions per year. Last year, it accepted 68 cases. All but one of those were cases that were discretionary, meaning it didn't have to take them. It could have taken 68 other cases, but it chose, it reached out to take that case on abortion in order to overturn the rights of the American people. It reached out to take those cases a few years ago on the Voting Rights Act. That's what John Roberts did, to overturn a key enforcement provision of the Voting Rights Act. It reached out and took that case in Citizens United to try to destroy our ability to regulate the dark money that is polluting our electoral process. So this is an activist court. It's out of control. Its decisions are hurting Americans. And this new term, it may very well continue that, because this faction seems like it's putting its foot on the gas to continue to advance this right-wing agenda that the people who are in the majority on the Supreme Court are beholden to.
Right. We're speaking with Lisa Graves, who these days you find at TrueNorthResearch.org. Well, though, when she comes on the show, she's speaking in her capacity as a private citizen and an attorney and a former Deputy Assistant Attorney General, with her sharing her expertise, not in official role as the head of True North Research. But you need to go check out the work they're doing, because it is so, so important with everything we're dealing with right now. So this court that begins work on Monday is taking on a number of big issues. And in fact, the biggies are there, right? Aren't they going to rule on I don't have the list in front of me, but there's some pretty substantial cases that they're again going to take on that could have ramifications as serious as overturning Roe v. Wade.
That's right. I mean, you know, they already, in addition to the decision, the Dobbs decision overturning those decades of precedent last year, it also invented a new, quote, doctrine, the so-called major questions doctrine that's been peddled by Leonard Leo and Charles Koch and this sort of right-wing network as a way to destroy the power of agencies to regulate corporations, to say that if it's, quote, a major question in the minds of these justices, that these agencies cannot issue rules on them, unless Congress expressly, like in some very narrow way, specifies for them to do that. And even then, they may not allow it under other doctrines that they are peddling and pushing, like the non-delegation doctrine. So it's a bit of a game they're playing. They're inventing doctrines, so-called doctrines. The newest, quote, doctrine or invented doctrine is this the state legislative theory, this notion that only the legislature of a state can create rules around elections, that courts have no role in our elections, that they can't oversee cases that come to them about the right to vote, about people exercising the right to vote, solely the legislature can do so. That's completely concocted, invented, has never been the dominant law in this country, has not been the law at the federal level, has not been the law at the state level. It's a complete invention, basically a fabrication, hinging on a few words in the Constitution that they're trying to breathe new meaning to in order to basically say that courts like the courts in Pennsylvania or Wisconsin, other states who are dealing with a pandemic and trying to make sure that people could vote remotely, safely, securely for their health, to say that courts have no role in elections, that only legislatures can. And not just that, but that in essence, a legislature could set aside the popular will, the actual vote of the people of the state that they live in, and supplant those views with their own, could basically set aside a democratic election in a Putin-like way and basically decide that they're going to send only Trump electors to vote for president. So it's an extremely dangerous set of claims that's being made. It's consistent with the claims that Trump and his terrible lawyers were making and were rejected over and over and over again in 2020. But now this court, this faction of the court, has decided they want to take up this case, and they may be willing to try to do that in order to further the subversion of our democracy, further the ability of their right-wing allies, the Republican politicians who back them, to basically ignore the will of the American people. I hope it won't come to that. There was a great brief that was filed by the Conference of Chief Justices, which is a nonpartisan group of the state Supreme Court justices in the country, and their brief talks about how even before the American Revolution, and at the time the Constitution was adopted and ratified, state courts had authority over elections, over cases bearing on elections. This is a long-standing part of U.S. law, and for this arrogant, extremist faction on the court to try to rewrite our Constitution in this way to hand power to their right-wing political allies is really unacceptable and disgusting. I hope they don't do it, but who knows, given what they've done on Roe and what they did to the EPA and other federal powers last term.
Right. It's a tough way to begin the new term of the Supreme Court with a healthy dose on our part of skepticism, but nothing healthy about what's happening there, other than Ketanji Brown Jackson is now on the bench. So, very mixed emotions right now, huh?
Well, that's right. I mean, this so-called independent state legislature theory or doctrine is one of the most dangerous cases that I've seen in years. Certainly the case on the Voting Rights Act where Roberts basically decimated Section 5 of the enforcement provisions of the Voting Rights Act, that was a very dangerous proposition, and it has wreaked havoc on our elections. It has allowed this march, this wave of extreme measures to try to make it harder for Americans to exercise their freedom to vote. So I am, personally glad for, the new appointment for Ketanji Brown Jackson to be serving on the court. She, did a very fine job in her hearings and talked about how she's a judge and she applies the law to the facts. She's joining people who do not. She's joining a set of judges who invented facts. There was the Alito opinion about the football coach and the prayer where he claimed it was never in public. There was never coercion. And there's photographic evidence that those were obviously coercive and they were in public. This wasn't just someone, praying to themselves in some sort of private setting. That's an oversimplification of the case, but basically Alito's opinion in that case from last year, this last summer, basically was proven false upon arrival. So here you have a new judge who has a very fine record of really being independent, being fair-minded, following the facts, following the law, and she's encountering colleagues who seem bent to do the opposite, to basically distort the law to advance their personal religious beliefs or their personal political agenda to the detriment of our country.
Wow. The words of wisdom, unfortunately, not that I was calling you to make me feel better, but I don't.
Sorry.
I don't.
There's reasons for hope. There's reasons for hope.
Is there?
That's not one of them.
No.
Yeah. No, you know, the registrations of women are way up since the Supreme Court did this arrogant thing to destroy women's reproductive rights, the federal protection of them. You know, so there's a much larger number of women who are voting. We could see in the Kansas election where the right wing, you know, were pushing forward on their anti-choice, anti-abortion agenda, how they were rebuked. There's a lot of young people who registered because they see what's happening with this court, with its hostility to basic freedoms, its hostility, its efforts to thwart our ability to do anything at the federal level to really mitigate the climate changes that are underway, with the way the Republican Party, in my view, has been captured by the big oil companies. And you can see them, you know, also, I think, standing up for, you know, good common sense policies like the student loan forgiveness, because that student loan debt burden has been enormous and weighty and really takes money out of our local economies and is a very heavy burden on individual people who, you know, just want to do better in their lives. And quite frankly, I don't know if I ever told you this, Nicole, but when I first, you know, applied to college and I was like, oh, it's a guaranteed student loan. Like, I'm so excited I get this, quote, guaranteed student loan. It took me a while to realize, oh, it's actually a guaranteed loan for the lender, because there's no way to get out of that loan. They get to charge an interest rate as if they have any risk whatsoever, but no one can discharge that student loan debt in bankruptcy, no matter what their circumstances, no matter what happens to them. The real guarantee is for the guaranteed rate of return, you know, basically endlessly without default for those banks that give those loans. And, you know, I think it's great that there have been, you know, there's been progress made this summer on some major pieces of legislation. And, you know, hopefully people are paying attention, realize that, you know, gas prices have come down and that you have this very far right wing fringe that's, you know, really attacking our very democracy. So I'm hopeful, Nicole, but I'm not hopeful about the Supreme Court. I think it really is on the wrong path by a long mile.
That's the understatement of the year. You're so true. Lisa Graves, you're the best. I thank you so much for jumping on today. I wish we were talking, you know, I wish we were celebrating that Ketanji Brown Jackson begins her term on the Supreme Court on Monday. But with everything else swirling around there and the fact that Clarence Thomas is there and his wife is who she is, I think the best we can do is say we're going to be paying close attention. And it's good to know we have people like you, Lisa, that I can call on to say what the hell is going on here.
Well, thanks for having me, Nicole, and sending my, you know, genuine prayers and good vibes for the people in Florida and, you know, other places that are facing this Hurricane Ian and that devastation. I hope that people can have a fast recovery and that the infrastructure can really be revitalized to withstand the reality that climate change is resulting in these bigger magnitude storms. And we're going to need a real investment in government and in our cities and towns in order to survive the coming storms like these.
I hope so. I'll tell you, I'm sitting here in Florida, in probably the safest place in the state that anyone could be, right? We just got really, really lucky, and that's all it is, because it's how the storm decided to turn at the last minute. You know, we there but for the grace of, says the atheist dog, go I. And so I you know, it's devastating. This is right across the state. I'm directly across Alligator Alley from Fort Myers. I mean, if it just continued due east, we would have been right in the line, but it went northeast. And so we got lucky. But you know, there's another storm forming out off the coast of Africa right now that could be headed right in our direction. This is through November 30th. It's nonstop, and it's gotten so much worse that all I can do is marvel at the resiliency of these people. Give thanks to Chef Jose Andres, who set up the World Kitchen again, because he's feeding people. You know, I feel for the people of South Carolina who are now getting hit by the same storm. Oh, it's just devastating.
Yep.
It's horrible. Lisa Graves, thank you so much for jumping on with me and always for your reasoned expertise. It's so appreciated.
Thanks, my friend. All right.
Thank you. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Lisa. Bye-bye. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Lisa Graves, again, find her at True North Research. These days, she's great. And I know. I look over in the chat room, and you guys always thank me for having Lisa on. Hey, thank Lisa. In a moment, we're going to speak with somebody who's not been on the program before, who has a piece in Daily Coast. She's a Daily Coast senior staff writer, but dealing with... you know, the fact that, well, the headline of her story, let me pull it up. I need to apologize to my guest. I told her, I think, that my studio often has gremlins. Well, the gremlins hit today, like 5 minutes before airtime, my main monitor cut out on me. So all my notes are missing and everything. It's not good. But our guest has a piece in Daily Coast basically saying that we need to rethink how we deal with disaster relief, and everything has changed. You know what? I want to, for a second before I bring her on, I'm sorry, April, bear with me one moment, because I'm a bit scattered today. But before I came on the air, I just saw a news item. My congressman, Ted Deutch, is retiring. We knew that. He announced it a few months ago. He didn't run for re-election. We have this other guy, Jared Moskowitz, who won the nomination, who will take Ted Deutch's place in Congress, and I'm not happy about it for a number of reasons, but that's a story for another day. Ted Deutch, I always had respect for. You know, I've known him for years and years and years. I knew him when he was in the state assembly before he went to Congress, replacing Robert Wexler. And he was just always a good guy, not the most progressive member of Congress, which I would have preferred, but, you know, he was okay. Until now. So right now, you know that the margin of in the House is like 4 votes. It's that tight, right? And there's still some really important legislation that needs to pass before this session of Congress ends. And the next one begins on January 3rd. Well, Ted Deutch today announced that he is resigning. Really, Ted? There's 3 months left. 3 months left. And you're going to resign rather than see it through? I get that he wants to go and start his new job and his new life, but that's not okay. That's putting his own personal goals and new job above his district, above the people who elected him. And I think that's really shitty. It's just, you know, as I tweeted, hashtag disappointed. Really, Ted Deutch, 3 months. When things are this close and so much is at stake, just not really cool. All right. So there, I said it and I'm glad I said it. I'm sorry. That's just wrong. It's just really wrong. All right. With that, let me, give me 1 second and let me bring in my guest. April, I so apologize that usually, look, I always have gremlins in here, but usually you can see things. You can see the video coming back to you, and I see, because I have Zoom on the other computer than I usually do, so everything is off balance. But first of all, thank you for being here. Can you hear me okay? I bet I have to do this. Will this work? April, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
You hear me now. I was just apologizing to you.
Oh, my goodness.
My studio is, I told you I have gremlins every now and then, and literally 7 minutes before I went on the air, my main monitor cut out. Oh, yeah. And so I had to scramble to move Zoom over to the other computer that I don't usually use it on. Otherwise, you'd be seeing the return of the picture. I'd have a wonderful Chiron on saying that you are April C. Is it pronounced Cease?
It's pronounced Cece. Just pretend Cece. The I is silent.
S-I-E-S-E, Cece. And you are a senior staff writer at Daily Kos. And yeah. Thank you so much for being here today. And the reason I invited you on is because I saw a story you wrote about the fact that we really need to change how we think about disaster relief. I mean, I'm here on the East Coast of Florida, really lucky at this moment that I was in the one safe spot in this state, you know, knocking on wood laminate here. But easily the next one could come ashore right here. And, you know, we'd be just as screwed as all the people are on the west coast of Florida. Now in Orlando, I'm seeing the footage out of Orlando where Ian parked and just spewed liquid for almost 24 hours. And now they're flooded. This storm is going to cost billions and billions and billions of dollars. And this is only one of what will likely be many because hurricane season goes through November 30th. So when you say we need to change how we think about disaster relief, in what way?
It's been inadequate as long as I've been alive, quite honestly. I'm only 32, but that's a ridiculous amount of time to just have entire families and communities wiped out because of environmental racism and because of a lack of resources or a lack of willingness really to help out the most marginalized and most vulnerable communities. We're also seeing a lot of changes just because of climate worsened disaster. I'm here coming to you from New Orleans where I can hear my neighbors working on their place right now, and I can count on both my hands how many weathered tarps I'm seeing from Ida from last year.
Wow. Wow. And see, and yes, again, I'm in South Florida and we still have blue tarps up around all the whole area from different storms throughout the years. But I'll tell you something else that's weird. My family moved to Florida. I'm much older than you are. My family moved down here from New York in 1971. I went away to college in Tampa in 77 and finally moved up to New York again in 81. That whole time never had a hurricane. In fact, you know, I moved out to LA, lived there for 15 years. I told the story yesterday how I wound up back here for Hurricane Andrew in 92. That's 30 years ago because my dad was an invalid. He had just had an accident, and I was here visiting him and rode the storm out with him. That, from the time my family moved to Florida in 71, that was our first hurricane. So, you know, over 20 years without a storm, and now we often get multiple storms in a season, and the intensity is greater. I mean, the Andrew was the biggest storm we had, and you look at the size and the intensity of it, that was a Category 5, but this storm was a hell of a lot more destructive than even Andrew was, which is unthinkable when you go back to that time. So a lot has changed, and everything costs more too. So to rebuild, to fix the problems is even more expensive, and we just don't have the money. So is it realistic for anybody to even think about rebuilding, like all those houses that were on those barrier islands that are destroyed? Should those be rebuilt?
Absolutely. In fact, it's really frustrating to be in Louisiana and see one of the first climate refugees actually come into place, because the Isle de Jean Charles is not going to be in our levee protection system, even though it would provide a better boundary for the entire region. The Army Corps determined that they did not want to include that section that has just been dissipating and eroding because of our own bad actions. Like, I'm talking big oil and all of the polluters that are in the state and just across the Gulf Coast. It's just really, really difficult to see communities that are unable to withstand these kinds of unprecedented events. But it's also a matter of us not taking those things as seriously as we should and modeling out these unprecedented things that are going to keep happening. I mean, the only way that our levees survived during Ida last year was because the Army Corps basically envisioned numbers they would never imagine for even a 2030 prediction. We have to be going bigger, and we have to allow the proper resources, or we're going to see a lot of, you know, climate refugees, and honestly, worse.
Absolutely. Now, you know, have you lived in New Orleans and Louisiana for very long, or are you fairly new there?
Quite some time. We're talking well over a decade. And when I first came here, it was a few years after Katrina. And my way of getting to know the city was by volunteering. The only way I can get a better idea of New Orleans was by literally buying a physical map and going to different places, because there was a time where I was looking for like a bank in 2009. So we're talking 4 years after Katrina. I just wanted to get a debit deposit in because I use a credit union. That bank was still boarded up from Katrina because it had withstood so much flooding. I couldn't rely on Google because they didn't change their maps until about 2011, 2013.
Oh, wow. And we don't have any reason to think that it's going to get any better. As the damage is more devastating, the destruction, the cost to repair it. And again, I don't see that happening. I just saw a story on, I don't know what, maybe it was MSNBC, that they were talking about there are millions, they need millions of meals. Chef Jose Andres and his World Kitchen is on the scene on the west coast of Florida.
I volunteered with them last year.
They're the best. Andres needs, he needs to be presented with a Nobel Prize for humanity or something. What an amazing man he is.
He's the real deal. I got a chance to meet him because he was out on the field taking meals from the kitchen that we were working in with no power, mind you, and going all the way out into Lafourche Parish, like handing meals out by boat.
Oh, I know. I've watched some shows about him. I'll tell you something. I've been to his restaurant, the bazaar in Los Angeles. I was there once, and it was brilliant. There's one on South Beach that I just found out is going to close sometime in the next year. So we need to just put away some money because it ain't cheap. But yeah. I want to go and experience it before he goes because I want to support him in any way possible. And the man's, we need to do a show on what he's doing one of these days, and I will. So what do you suggest? What do we do other than heed the warnings? If they tell you to evacuate, don't screw around. Get the hell out of there, right?
There needs to be a proper infrastructure for folks who cannot evacuate. We are talking folks who may have accessibility issues or are in medical facilities or people who are incarcerated, especially those facilities, prisons and jails and the like. Those are the people who are enduring the worst conditions day in and day out, and they're also facing down mass flooding and storm surge without really any protection. I mean, we saw what happened in the aftermath of Katrina. It was horrible.
Really horrible. And we also learned a lot about it. One of New Orleans' famous residents is Harry Shearer. I don't know if you know, Harry and his wife Judith live there, and I've known
him. I used to live in his neighborhood.
Oh, really?
He lives in the quarter. I just lived around the corner on Toulouse.
Well, he loves New Orleans, and he made a movie called The Big Uneasy about what happened with Katrina because New Orleans didn't even take a direct hit. It was the levees that failed. It was the Army Corps of Engineers who screwed up, and allegedly they fixed the problems, but you still had Ida. They held up better than they did during Katrina, but it's still, what's the old saying? You can't fight Mother Nature. And there are problems. When you build certainly that close to sea level, there are problems. I love down here, there was a, the video is frozen. Sorry about that.
Yeah, but it's okay. There I was, can still hear you.
It's with a lovely expression on my face too. I got to admit, again, the gremlins. I'm glad it's Friday. I have the weekend to take the studio apart. But the fact is that nothing, we're not prepared for climate change. Things are going to get worse and worse and worse, and if we can't respond in the same way, and I think that was the point of the piece that you wrote, we need to figure out a new way around it. And I don't think anyone is thinking in those lines, along those lines, are they?
I don't really see the same kind of urgency. I think it's sometimes really hard to get people to understand the level in which climate change is affecting the entire country. We're having, like, just based off of like the current data, way more storms that are strengthening as they come inland and leading to way more devastation. I mean, you saw that Ian's already strengthened back into a hurricane as it moves along the Atlantic coast. It's something where this poses a national threat. So it should be treated as such. It's a global threat. I really do think that we should declare some type of climate emergency to free up those funds and to really take a good hard look at how we've been responding to disasters in piecemeal ways and recognize that this is not sustainable. We're already killing people. We already have people who are suffering in the wake of the 2020 storms in like St. Charles and Southwest Louisiana. We're talking multiple major storms that hit that have devastated areas where people are still living in the same FEMA trailers, if they can even hold on to that.
Wow. The same FEMA trailers. That's astounding That, you know, and again, we just shouldn't be in this situation. All right, I fixed something on the broadcast screen anyway. This is a mess. April, I need to have you back on when you have my full attention and we can really have a conversation and I'm not freaking out about the gremlins here. Thank you. It was so nice to meet you. And I'm glad you're on this beat because you seem to get it. What else do you cover at Daily Coast? Obviously, climate issues. What else?
I really do cover climate and environmental justice. Like, this is something that I live. I was very, very lucky to be able to stay in a safe place last year and hit the ground running and help out. I was able to work with World Central Kitchen. I worked with a lot of environmental justice group in Cancer Alley. I became part of a group that turned into a Louisiana Just Recovery Network, where we take all of our referrals from environmental justice leaders. These are frontline communities who are fighting these big battles against companies that are doing the worst to them and to the entire planet. Like, if I wasn't this passionate, I don't know what I would do in terms of like work, in terms of like how I spend my time. I'm lucky to just not have a lot of obligations that way. So it frees me up to connect with my community and do everything I can to, you know, help the folks who need it and learn by their resilience and strength.
That's great. So you're walking the talk too, because not only are you covering this crisis that is, I mean, if people don't understand what kind of a climate crisis we're in after this week, then they have blinders on, or all they watch is Fox, not news. You need to open your eyes and see what's going on. And the fact that you moved, where did you move from?
I moved from the Bay Area, which is now encountering unprecedented drought and wildfires, things that I would have never seen growing up. I have friends who see ash and soot on their windowsills from fires that aren't even remotely close to touching them. It's horrifying.
Wow. See, that's frightening. And here we are. We've got too much water. And out west, they're done. Look, we're thinking about moving to Arizona. And I had so many listeners say, don't go to Arizona. No. They don't have water. You know, there's a problem wherever you might go. And so much is going to be decided on November 8th. If Carrie Lake wins, we're not going to Arizona. But if Ron DeSantis wins again, we're not staying in Florida. So everything's in flux. But there's no place that is the perfect place to go right now, because not only this country, the whole world has these challenges that seem insurmountable. If we don't do something about the climate, though, these storms like Ian are just going to keep coming. Hurricane season doesn't end till November 30th. So we got a long way to go. April Cease, thank you so much for coming on today. I am going to be back in touch in the next few weeks and have you on. And I promise a much better experience.
It's all good. Sometimes these things happen. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
They happen all the time here, just so you know. But, you know, hey, this is what happens when you do it with spit and chewing gum. You know, the gremlins. Anyway, April Cease, find her at your Twitter handle. I usually have it up on the screen, but I don't today. But it's, what is it?
It's Italian.
Italian.
I got that Twitter name because I lost a bet when I was a teenager. And now that I'm verified, that's it. That's all she wrote.
Right. A-Y-E, Italian. I like it. Yeah. It's clever.
Thank you.
You must be Italian, I'm guessing.
I am. I'm Sicilian on my father's side.
Look at that. See how that works? And thank you, April. I will be in touch. It was a pleasure to meet you, and I really appreciate you joining us today. And I really appreciate what you wrote. I will link to it from the blog where I post today's show. It'll be at nicolesandler.com/9-30-22. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. You take care. Bye-bye. Thanks to April. That was great. You guys, you regulars know. I knew it. At 4:53, I had to restart the computer because I couldn't bring up the Zoom on the into the program that I used to stream. And it just all went sort of downhill from there. So I restarted and it didn't work. Anyway, I have the weekend now to get it back together, but I also have the weekend to fume a little bit. So the thing I was so mad about, there was a continuing resolution. You heard about this. I told you about it earlier in the week that, by the way, Congress is going on recess after today, after they pass the funding bill so that the government doesn't shut down tonight at midnight. So it's a continuing resolution. And this continuing resolution includes in it $18 billion in storm relief. Because guess what? We have, you know, it's not only Ian, who's killing us, literally. But Fiona is still impacting. Puerto Rico, you know, is part of the United States. I get that not everybody understands that, but Puerto Rico should be a state. It isn't. It's a territory, but it is part of the United States. President Biden says he's going to really help Puerto Rico, that this disaster funding to the $18 billion, which is not even a drop in the bucket, looking at all the damage we've seen so far just in Florida alone. You know who voted against this bill? Every single Republican member of Congress from Florida. Probably every single Republican member of Congress, period. But I'm just looking at Florida. Florida, right now, suffering from the worst storm ever. And you heard what Uncle Joe said, right? You heard that this is likely going to be the most fatalities, the worst storm, certainly in Florida, in terms of human life. We heard the Lee County sheriff. He was the first one to come out and say it.
I don't have confirmed numbers. I definitely know the fatalities are in the hundreds. There are thousands of people that are waiting to be rescued. And again, cannot give a true assessment until we're actually on scene, assessing each scene. And we can't access people. That's the problem. We're accessing the bridges. We're seeing what's compromised and what's not. And this will be a life-changing event for the men and women that are responding.
It is a life-changing event for everyone. I'll tell you, even those of us who got really lucky. Again, I don't use the word lucky to describe myself ever, certainly not in the second part of my life. Luck just, you know, did not follow me. That said, this week, I thank my lucky stars, while at the same time, I agonize for the people here in Florida. It is devastating, absolutely devastating. But I'll tell you what, it is not only due to the hurricane. Let me see. Again, everything's all screwed up here, but let me see if I can't pull up this video. There is, on South Beach, Miami Beach, again, we did not get hit by this storm. We had some rain and wind from the outer bands, but we did not take a direct hit. Right. However, today, somebody went out on South Beach. Let me see if I can. Here we go. Here's the video. So somebody went out on South Beach and shot video of the king tide. So the king tide, don't ask me the technical questions. It's just, the super high tide. I think it coincides with the full moon. So the king tide, combined with the high tide, this is what happened on South Beach today. And for those of you who are not watching a video feed, I will tell you. So they show the water. There's cameramen.
Oh, no, the ATV is gone.
And there are people out on the water, and here it comes. It comes in, and all of a sudden, it's going so fast, it's moving a police car, an SUV.
That big wave, I'm done.
The water keeps coming, and they're going to follow it across the street. And you'll see there's like an overpass, and it goes in the intercoastal, and this wave just swept about five people over the rocks into the intercoastal.
We got a big wave and dropped about five people into the wave.
Five people in the wave. They're calling emergency rescue now because those people were swept, bicycles and all, over the rocks. So, I mean, that is just, that's just the, you know, a typical day. Oh, here, there's more. They're showing the whole seating area on the beach covered. Let me back this up a little bit so you could see what I just saw. So here they're showing, you know, the beach chair part of the beach, and it's all there's standing water surrounding the lounge chairs, many many yards back from the shoreline. The whole place is flooded, and it flooded out onto the street. that happens in Miami Beach now at a high tide. And when the high tide combines with the king tide, it's even worse. You know, this may not be a popular statement I'm about to make, but they're not going to be able to rebuild. You take this storm and you take the others that will follow. And of course, Fiona, which came before, and we've still got a couple of months of this. This storm will be the most expensive so far to hit the U.S. nation. And I'm not only saying the mainland, because there is Puerto Rico too. They're not going to be able to rebuild. In Florida, I think you've heard me talk about this. I think finally other people are starting to talk about it. We have an insurance crisis, and I'm not talking health insurance. I'm talking homeowners insurance. They've known about this for years. The insurance companies are either going bankrupt and therefore not paying out claims, or they've already left the state. People who buy a home today are unable to buy homeowners insurance. There used to be what was called the insurer of last resort. If you couldn't find insurance anywhere else, there was a company called Citizens, and they had to sell you a policy. Well, even they're not writing policies now. And the Florida State Legislature holds a session. It runs about 2 months from like in January, February, March, in that time. And then they're done. And then they're always calling special sessions. Well, Governor Death Sentence said, okay, well, we'll have a special session to deal with the insurance crisis. And when the special session came, they did not deal with the insurance crisis. Instead, it was one of DeSantis's bullshit, you know, don't say gay bills or the anti-woke legislation or some other culture war that he's waging because he's a fascist dictator wannabe. And they still haven't fixed the insurance problem. Well, you think it's going to get any better now? You think all those homes on Sanibel Island are going to be rebuilt? No, they won't. And my thought is they shouldn't be, because this is going to keep happening. This is going to happen again and again and again. I hate to say it, but I'm getting older. Maybe I'll be around another 10 years, another 15 years. I shudder to think what's going to happen during those years. And if I didn't have a kid, and if I wasn't a compassionate human who cares about the, you know, the fate of others, then I'd say, all right, well, I'm out of here soon. So, you know, screw it. My mind doesn't work that way. I'm deathly worried about what we're leaving for, you know, the future generation. I guess here's where I get really cynical. I'm saying generation. I'm not saying generations. You know, I adopted my daughter. I did it because of my personal situation where I was at that time in my life. But I'll tell you something. I don't think I would bring a child into this world right now. I know people are still, you know, going through, jumping through hoops to get pregnant, to have kids. Let me tell you something. There are many, many children in the world who need homes. Rather than bring another life onto this planet when the future is so tenuous, give a child who needs a family a home. Just something to think about. We're coming up on November's National Adoption Month. That's the month that I adopted Allison, just coincidentally. Adopting her was the best thing I ever did. And I don't feel guilty about, you know, bringing another life into this world that is going to be very difficult to navigate. Ever more difficult with each passing year. My God, I'm getting really, really negative on a Friday afternoon, and I shouldn't. I should end with a song or something, right? Yeah, see, the world is overpopulated as it is. When I hear of people, you know, with announcements of the birth of their grandchild, my first thought is, oh my God, that poor child, what their life is going to be. I came at the very end of the baby boomers. I was born in November of 1959. So, you know, I'm at the tail end. But I'm always reminded of the line from the song from Kevin Gilbert that I played for you a few weeks ago. One of them says, "We're the cleanup crew for parties we were too young to attend." I hate that my generation did not understand the severity, the importance of their care of the planet. They did not care for this planet. And this is the legacy that they left. I'm saying they. I guess I'm part of it too. I'm sorry. I apologize. We need to try to do better for the people that come after us. But at this stage, I don't know what we can do other than apologize. So to future generations, I am so sorry that this is the planet we left you. I can't help but think of Star Trek. And, you know, when they'd go into a world that was like a dying planet and they knew the aliens, as they were called, that would come to the Enterprise looking for another world where they can send their people to populate. That's where we are. Except we don't have that other world. Mars ain't it. So, I don't know. Remember Out in the Country by Three Dog Night? Yeah, good song to go out on, except I'd get copyright violated. I should just go out with Goodness Gracious, because it is the song that says it all. The question is, can I pull it up fast enough? Again, because I don't have my regular... you know what? I do. I still have this computer. I just don't have my second monitor handy. And this computer is freezing up on me. Okay, I guess I'm not doing that. Maybe I am. Anyway, so the weekend is here. We're in overtime now. Thank you. Progressive Voices is gone. And I guess I have to apologize for today's show because everything was kind of foobar. I will try to rebuild the studio this weekend along with everything else that I need to do. And next week, we've got a lot of good stuff going on. Jason Leopold had another FOIA FOIA request that he sent in like 5 years ago finally paid off. And what it paid off with was something that he didn't even ask for. It was an off-the-record interview between President Obama in his last couple of days in the White House with a group of reporters. Apparently, presidents do this on their way out, and Obama did this. Usually you don't get to see the transcripts, but Jason Leopold got the transcripts. So he's writing for Bloomberg now, but if you go on Twitter, you'll see it. It's everywhere. So Jason will join us on Monday to talk about that. I think Laffy might be here on Tuesday because they are right now on their way back to California from Canada. Yes, where they're living, or where they're moving, I should say. And yes, we got other stuff. So anyway, we got a big week planned for you. I'm fumfering until I can get this song ready for you. Again, you might want to listen to the lyrics. I can leave you with the news. I should, you know what? I'll leave you with the news, and then I'll play Kevin Gilbert for you. Okay? All right. Thank you for listening, everyone. Thanks for bearing with my gremlin problem. And have a wonderful weekend. I'll see you Monday. Stick around through the news for a musical commentary on our time. Try to have a good weekend. Be safe, everybody, please. And if you're in South Carolina or anywhere on the path of Ian, be extra careful. Get out of there if you can. Stay safe. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Down power lines, down trees, blown transformers, wires into the streets.
There are neighborhoods now underwater. The biggest concern here was rainfall.
They're also concerned about alligators. They're concerned about snakes.
Once the water came from the Gulf of Mexico down here, it was a river.
You see that section of the Sanibel Causeway just wiped out by Hurricane Ian.
I've seen office buildings, home after home after home, with trees down and debris, boats sunk in the harbor.
Whole towns decimated, completely leveled.
I came here in the mid-70s. I was on the police department for almost 25 years. Saw a lot of storms here. This is by far the worst storm I have ever witnessed.
The scope of the devastation left by Hurricane Ian in Florida is massive, with projections of damage estimates ranging from $30 billion to $50 billion, and the realization it'll take years to rebuild. President Biden's decision to declare a major disaster in Florida will unlock extra federal aid, but right now the main focus is on trying to help those suffering without homes, water, or power. As of Friday morning around 6 a.m., nearly 2 million customers were still without electricity. Hospitals have been evacuated in Lee County. Rescue efforts have already led to the rescue of hundreds of Floridians, with probably hundreds more waiting for help to arrive. The storm was downgraded to a tropical storm as it crossed Florida, but regained hurricane strength Thursday night as it traveled over Atlantic waters, with top winds of 85 miles per hour Friday morning. It's projected to hit Charleston, South Carolina, on Friday as a Category 1 storm. At least 19 people have been reported dead due to the storm so far, with worries that that number could go a lot higher.
I don't have confirmed numbers. I definitely know the fatalities are in the hundreds.
This could be the deadliest hurricane in Florida's history.
So as Florida contends with the widespread damage left behind by Ian in what officials say is likely the largest natural disaster in the state's history, South Carolina is now bracing for today's landfall. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is eagerly taking whatever money President Biden is offering, but we must remember that then-freshman Congressman DeSantis's first vote upon entering Congress in 2013 was a big fat no on a federal bailout for the victims of Superstorm Sandy after it decimated that region. Just reminding you. And DeSantis isn't above stunts as we approach Election Day in 6 weeks. A new gas tax break and other measures will take effect over the weekend, including some aimed at preventing protests outside people's homes and cracking down on so-called street takeovers. Now, although Palm Beach County and parts south on Florida's East Coast were mostly spared from Ian's wrath, proverbial dark clouds continue gathering over the former guy's Mar-a-Lago estate. The much-ridiculed judge overseeing Donald Trump's challenge to the FBI seizure of documents from Mar-a-Lago again sided with the former president Thursday in this ongoing showdown with the Justice Department. Yep, U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon issued an order extending the timeline of an outside review that Trump demanded of the documents and other materials until mid-December. No urgency here. And she also overruled an order from the special master, Judge Raymond Deary, declaring that the former guy's lawyer must submit to him in writing by September 30th an accounting of all materials seized from Mar-a-Lago and proof of Donald Trump's claims that the FBI planted some of the documents as they executed the search warrant. What? Well, the Justice Department has already filed an appeal. And again, the 11th Circuit Court will hear it, the same panel that overruled Cannon's last egregious ruling. Just incredible. So, six Republican states filed a lawsuit Thursday to block President Biden from canceling up to $20,000 in student loan debt from millions of borrowers. The suit came 2 days after a conservative attorney in Indiana filed a separate lawsuit asking a court to overturn the policy. To remind you, Biden wanted to cancel up to $10,000 in federal student loans for people earning less than $125,000 a year, with another $10,000 forgiven for recipients of federal Pell Grants. But in response to the lawsuit, the Biden administration scaled back eligibility for its loan forgiveness plan. So about 770,000 borrowers whose federal student loans are guaranteed by the government but held by private lenders will now be excluded from debt relief. Lovely. Just remember, this is courtesy of the Republicans. Just saying. Well, as expected, Russian dictator Vladimir Putin announced during a Kremlin ceremony Friday morning that Russia is formally absorbing 4 Ukrainian territories in what will be the largest forcible annexation of land in Europe since 1945. This comes after the people in those territories, which make up about 18% of Ukraine, allegedly voted in favor of joining Russia in these Moscow-based so-called referendums that have been widely dismissed by Western leaders as a sham. Russia then went on to vow to defend its claims to the annexed areas and hinted that they'd use nuclear weapons if necessary. In response, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Friday that his country is applying, quote, under an accelerated procedure to become a member of NATO. He signed Ukraine's application along with the Speaker of Parliament and Prime Minister of Ukraine, saying, quote, "It is here in Ukraine that the values of our Euro-Atlantic community have obtained real vital energy. The strength of the nation that fights for freedom and the strength of nations that help in this fight." Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson making history again today as the Supreme Court holds the investiture ceremony for the first Black woman on the bench. The ceremony will include the use of Chief Justice John Marshall's historic bench chair and commission language that dates to the first justice appointed by President George Washington. While the Senate voted 72-25 to pass a bill to keep the government funded until December 16th, the stopgap funding bill includes $12 billion for Ukraine, $1 billion in heating assistance for low-income families, $20 million for the water crisis in Jackson, Mississippi, billions in disaster aid, and $112 million for federal court security. The legislation now goes to the House, which is expected to pass it today ahead of the midnight deadline to avert a shutdown, and then Congress goes on recess for another couple of weeks. In fact, the House will be out until after the election, with the Senate returning for a two-week session somewhere before Election Day. By the way, that January 6th committee will not hold a hearing next week, this despite postponing the hearing scheduled for this past Wednesday. But the committee did meet with Ginni Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and a right-wing activist. They met for 4 hours on Thursday, during which time she reiterated her belief that the election was stolen. Yes, we are indeed an opposite world. And that's just a bit of what's news. For now, I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.
Goodness gracious, is there nothing left to say? When the ones who get to keep looking are the ones that look away. It's pabulum for the sleepers in the cult of brighter days. The cult of brighter days. Goodness gracious, at the mercy of the crooks. We're broken, stroking vegetables, and there's way too many cooks. In every pot a pink slip, in every mouth a hook. In every mouth a hook. Goodness gracious, I'm not listening anymore. Cause the spooks are in the White House and they've justified a war. So wake me when they notify we're gonna fight some more. Gonna fight some more. Goodness gracious, not many people care. Concern is getting scarcer to compassion really rare. I can see it on our faces, I can feel it in the air. Goodness gracious me. Goodness gracious, my generation's lost. They burned down all our bridges. bridges before we had a chance to cross? Is it the winter of our discontent or just an early frost? Just an early frost. Goodness gracious, of apathy I sang. The baby boomers had it all and wasted everything. Now recess is almost over and they won't get off the swing. Won't get off the swing. Goodness gracious, we came in at the end. No sex that isn't dangerous, no money left to spend. We're the cleanup group of parties, we went too young. Goodness gracious, we came in at the end. No sex that isn't dangerous, no money left to spend. We're the cleanup group of parties, we were too young to attend. Goodness gracious me. Goodness gracious, my grandma used to say, the world's a scary place now, things were different in her day. What horrors will be commonplace when my hair starts to gray?
That's Kevin Gilbert. Goodness gracious. Oh, I hate that it ended that way, from his Live at the Troubadour album. All right, everybody, I want to leave you on a better note, on a happier note. So go have a great weekend and, and send out good thoughts to all the people in the wake, in the dealing with the after effects or dealing with the storm. All right. I'll see you Monday. Bye, everyone.